everyone, and welcome back to Coaching with Carrie live here on Blog Talk Radio. I hope you had an amazing week, and I'm super excited to get right back into this coaching series, which is based off of, just as a reminder for you all, and especially if you're joining for the first time, this particular coaching session is based off of the New York Times bestseller, Shift, How Top Real Estate Agents Tackle Tough Times, written by Gary Keller, Dave Jenks, and Jay Papasan. And this book truly is really just going over strategies for achieving success in any real estate market. These are the things that are going to absolutely help you not only survive but thrive in a shifting market, but it's going to also make you the most successful you can possibly be in a really good market. So all of these particular tactics and strategies should be employed by every real estate business owner regardless. So it's just a phenomenal back to the basics, but truly strategies that you should focus on for any real estate professional. Also, you don't have to be in real estate, right? You can be in the insurance world, in the finance world, in the mortgage world, a business owner in any industry, and many of these tactics are going to apply to you. A lot of my earlier coaching sessions, which, by the way, are recorded and are all here on Coaching with Carrie on Blog Talk Radio, can truly apply to you if you are in the real estate industry or if you are not. These are really things that you can employ and ideas and concepts that you can bring into your business and your life regardless of what industry that you are in. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're a salesperson, if you're a business person, hopefully all of these things are beneficial to you. So remember, you can listen in live every Friday at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, or you can go ahead and log on to Blog Talk Radio, search for Coaching with Carrie, and listen to any of my recorded sessions. There are many of them. I've been doing this for quite a while now, and I've talked about a variety of different things. We've talked about the one thing concept, which is an amazing concept for all areas of anyone's life. We've talked about the six personal perspectives, which is truly mindset-driven for any entrepreneur, any business owner, any person who is starting in a new industry, etc. And we've talked about the fundamentals behind running and building a business in real estate. Again, it can apply to many industries, and now we're working through Shift. And I will continue to many times do coaching series surrounding books. And if, in fact, you don't have a book that we're doing a coaching session on or series on, if you've not had the chance to read it, please reach out to me. I'm happy to get you a copy of the book. If you are interested in this material, if it benefits you, I want to make sure that you have what you need to take advantage of it fully. All you need to do is reach out to me, which you can do right through Blog Talk Radio. You can email me at carrieh@kw.com. You can find me on Facebook at Coaching with Carrie and send me a message there. My Twitter handle is carrieh.kw. However it's convenient for you, please feel free to contact me. Also, just so you know, if you're listening in live, you are able to call in. That number is right on your screen or on your phone, however you are logging into Blog Talk Radio today. The guest call-in number is right there at 602-753-1888. And I'll answer your questions. This can certainly be interactive, so don't hesitate to do that if you want to call in. But right now, we're going to move on right away and get right into it with tactic number 10 here in the book Shift, because of course we've gone through all the tactics prior to this. We're moving through the book. We've got a few more tactics in the next 2 weeks, and then just a couple more topics kind of towards the end of the book that we're going to really kind of wrap it up for you, and then we'll be starting on our next series. So today I want to talk about expanding the options and creative financing. Last time you listened in my last session, which was of course tactic number 9, we talked about creating urgency and overcoming buyer reluctance and, you know, the buyer scripts and how you can work through that and the strategies for compelling buyers away from their fears and into their new home, especially in a shifting market. So we're still going to move on and continue on with buyer stuff at this point, but there's going to be some seller information in here as well, because what we know is that affordability drives the real estate industry, right? In fact, you might even say that affordability is the real estate industry for all intents and purposes. Buyers have to be able to buy in order for sellers to be able to sell, right? It's as simple as it sounds, but it's really, really important. Affordability is truly the juice that makes the market go or makes it stop. When it's up, the market goes up, and when it's down, well, the market goes down. And if you ever want to know where the market is headed, just check how affordable a house is in your market. That's your thermometer, and it's extremely accurate. what market you're in or headed toward is truly easily gauged by one thing, and that is affordability. So when Gary Keller got into the business back in 1979 and interest rates topped at 18%, about the only way that you could buy or sell a home was with lots of creativity, right? Affordability driven by high interest rates was unraveling and making sales tough to come by at the time. And so making any sale work was a challenge. And so the real estate professionals in that time had to engage daily in a game of how can we make this deal work? It was game-like in that it rewarded those who thought competitively and strategically, and like a mystery to sort out, a riddle to solve, if you will, or a code to decipher, right? Those who solved the riddle could then transact business while everyone else watched from the sidelines. In a shift, finding creative ways to help buyers afford to buy and sellers afford to sell is the game you must learn to play and win, or buying and selling literally slows down to a crawl and it will affect you and your business dramatically. So let's talk about creative financing. This is the term that we would use to describe creative ways to basically resolve affordability challenges, right? Every buyer is unique and every seller is unique. Every lender is unique. And then along comes the economy and the market itself, creating this unique environment in which these three parties must figure out how to do business. All of this means one thing, which is if the conditions weren't creative deals, but you aren't able to put these deals together, then you could be done doing many deals, right? So unfortunately, creative financing isn't well understood by most. And as a result, well, you know, it sometimes gets a bad rap. We've heard about this. Everybody hears that and cringes now, especially because of what happened a few years back. The reality is it's far too valuable a vehicle to abandon just because a few misbehaving individuals have misused it, right? In a shifting market, you will often need all the legal, sound, and historically proven financing solutions at your disposal to get some tough transactions closed. That's just the bottom line. As a real estate sales consultant, your buyers and sellers expect you to educate them about all the financial options they might have to create the best win-win transaction possible. So when the market shifts, it's time to bring out the creative financial ideas and expand everyone's opportunities. And sometimes a buyer can easily fall within the standard guidelines of traditional home financing, but sometimes they don't. And when they don't, it means that they have the necessary down payment, they have income qualifications for a loan, and lending programs that are being offered, but it just, something is burdening them, and you know, there's one little thing in the way. So if it happens to be a seller's market, then the burden is usually completely on the buyer to figure out why and a way to buy a house. Houses in an upward shift usually sell without any need for creativity from anyone. A shift can change all of this in a snap, however. So in a shift downward, not many houses are selling. So if sellers still want to sell, they may have to employ creative financing. If a buyer falls out of the standard guidelines of down payment and qualifications for traditional financing program, well, then it's time to bring in the creativity to see if there's a way to help that buyer and seller put a sale together. To make creative financing work, you have to do first three things. First, you'll have to be clear about what buyers, sellers, and lenders want, right? Specifically, what each individual wants and generally what each of them needs, right? Not only wants, but needs. Second, you'll want to be well-versed on what each of them can do creatively to put a sale together. Each one has a time-proven list of options they can consider to make the sale work. And lastly, you'll need to be creative in making all of this work at one time. So creative financing is a combination of knowledge and skill. To find success, you must understand each party's motives, right? You need to learn the choices available to each of them, and then you must creatively suggest solutions that work for all. So think of creative financing as getting outside the box to create more choices when choices are necessary. At the most basic level, creative financing is looking at more options than are used in typical financing and transactions. It's actually a checklist to consider with additional things to mull over before declaring a dead deal, right? It's really a combination of thinking outside the box and inside the deal. So in any creative transaction, there are essentially three players who can participate: the seller who owns the home, the buyer who wants to buy it, and the lender who approves the necessary loan on the transaction. And to give everyone a fighting chance to do business, you can discuss with each player the creative financing solutions that any of them can bring to the table to get the deal done. There are three areas of creative financing. One, creative things sellers can do to sell their home. 2, creative things buyers can do to purchase a home, and 3, creative things lenders can do to finance a transaction. So the basic financial terms of any real estate transaction are the offer amount, the down payment, the loan amount, the interest rate, and the length or term of the mortgage loan. Since the very first real estate transaction ever, creative individuals have been tinkering with these variables to get houses sold and closed. The 24 options presented in Figure 50, which is on page 200 of your book, Shift, if you have it, maybe the most common, but they barely scratch the surface of what's possible, right? When we talk about creative things sellers can do, we talk about, seller contributions, seller-funded permanent buy-downs, seller-funded temporary buy-downs, owner financing, contract for deeds, seller second lease option and lease purchase, wraparound and assumable mortgage, and that's just scratching the surface. We talk about creative things buyers can do to purchase a home. We talk about gift funding, selling and refinancing existing assets and non-occupant co-borrowers and using a 401k, temporary IRA transfers, pledged asset mortgages, equity transfers, bridge loans, employer-assisted mortgages, et cetera. And when we talk about things that lenders can do to finance a transaction more creatively, we think about, there's lender-funded buy-downs, there's Fannie Mae My Community Mortgages, there's, HomePass, there's, running scenarios with automated underwriting systems, adjusting amortization periods to lower the payment, adjusting interest rates to cover closing costs. There's grants and bonds, which we all know about. There's RD, there's mortgage credit certificates, there's private lending, and the list goes on and on. So a seller buy down could be combined with a buyer's gift fund along with a bond program offered through the lender to sell a house. Do you see what I'm saying? So I chose one of those, each of those things in each area, and combined them all to actually make something work. A buyer using a non-occupant co-borrower could negotiate a seller second in addition to an owner finance primary loan or a conventional loan. Here we go again, 3 different people being creative to put one solution together. At the end of the day, you can put together about any combination so long as the terms are legal, all 3 parties agree to them, and everything is properly disclosed, right? The greater your awareness of the viable options, the more creative solutions you can offer to make the transaction work. And truly, the more professional you can be as the real estate expert of choice for your client. Creative financing begins with simply knowing where the bottom line sits for the seller, the buyer, or the lender, and you must first know what everyone wants before you can suggest creative ways to get there. And what is each party most interested in accomplishing in any given transaction? Well, sellers are most often driven transaction. So number 1, creative things sellers can do to sell their house. Let's dig a little bit more into this, because when you represent David Reed, and sellers can assist with all 3 of them. In other words, sellers have the ability to help buyers who don't have the income to qualify for a loan amount, who don't have enough down payment funds available, or who may have less than perfect credit. And the dollar amount sellers would be willing to reduce their sales price by might actually translate to a greater buyer incentive when offered as a creative financing solution. In other words, it's always worth considering. The conversation alone will validate you in the eyes of any seller, by the way. So probably the most common solution comes in the form of seller contributions, which is very commonplace in most markets. I know it is here in Minnesota. All of you are very familiar with it. Sometimes these are called seller concessions, and they're including potentially paying for buyer closing costs, even conveying personal items in the transaction. And when we are researching, for different books, when our company was researching, particularly for the Millionaire Real Estate Investor book, if you haven't heard that, they heard a story, and it was written about in the book, about a seller who couldn't get a refurbished starter home sold until he included his old BMW. A clever ad with the tagline, shelter and transportation for one low price, basically got him the offer he was after. And more commonly, your seller will either advertise they are willing to pay some or all of the closing costs or agree to a buyer's request for it in negotiations. One may attract an offer, the other may make an offer turn into a sale. Either way, it works, right? most lenders limit seller closing cost contributions to between, 3 and 9%. Now it's mostly 6%, depending upon how much the buyer pays as a down payment. However, just be aware that if a seller pays more, it could likely affect the appraisal, so you need to look at that as well. And on a side note, remember that anytime a buyer adds any dollars to the sales price, which increases the mortgage amount, they're also increasing their monthly payment. And of course, you need to understand that as well. Saving enough money to buy a home is a challenge for most home buyers, so seller contributions to closing costs can make a home purchase obviously more achievable. Even if the buyer can afford to pay the whole amount, the savings allows them to make immediate improvements to the home instead of waiting and saving for them. The price for that convenience in this example is basically, in an example, might be like $30 a month, right? And this could be a source of money a buyer never thought of and might consider and will help the home sell. Next on the list is the seller buy down, and this is where the seller buys down the interest rate on the buyer's mortgage loan for the life of the loan. That would be a permanent buy-down, or for the first few years, which is a temporary buy-down. When interest rates are low, this tactic is too often overlooked. Nevertheless, buy-downs can be effective tools for closing the deal in any market. For example, a seller could pay about $5,000 to permanently buy down a 30-year note on a $250,000 loan from now this is high because we're going on the book here, but back then it was 6% to 5.5%, so that's 2 points. 2% of the loan, and it can translate to $70 in saving on the monthly payment, but it can save much more in the interest paid over the life of the loan. And in the example, it translates to almost $30,000 in interest savings over the whole loan. And what's more important, it might actually help them get approved for it. So that's the most important part. So marketing the buy-down, though, can be tricky, so be careful. Do you market it as an interest rate buy-down or on a total savings? It's your call, really, but a word of caution. Be very careful whenever marketing something like this. You'd want to talk to a professional that knows a lot about kind of rules and regulations with the Department of Commerce and things like that, because you would not, want to misrepresent that. You could also work with a loan officer to verify your numbers, obviously making sure those are very accurate and they need to be based on the current rates and the expected offer price and the down payment and all of those types of things. So always follow all disclosure laws that apply to your advertising, of course, and make sure that you talk to the people that you need to talk to make sure that you're marketing correctly. If the seller owns their home free and clear, they have another excellent option, which is, of course, owner financing. Sellers with no mortgage can consider turning their equity into a monthly check using the house as collateral, right? And this was very common back in the 70s and early 80s, and at the time, any sales professional worth their salt could structure a solid owner finance sales contract. The key is to make sure the sellers exercise their proper due diligence. For various reasons, many potential buyers suffer from less than perfect credit. Seller simply has to determine the facts on why their credit suffered, and others may have unverified income from a personal business that isn't established long enough to count towards a conventional loan. Usually you need 2 to 3 year track record on that. And these buyers will see owner financing as a big incentive to buy, and they might even consider it a reason to pay even a little bit higher of a price. So the sellers can benefit as well. Not only can they sell their house and literally move on with their lives, they can also earn a solid return on their loan. And most private loans carry higher interest rates to offset the risk. So the seller thinks they need the money in a few years, they can require that the buyer refinance the loan in order to pay off the seller's note. A good deal structured around a 2, 3, or 5 year balloon private mortgage will get the buyers in, earn the seller's extra income, facilitate the buyer eventually qualifying for a conventional or FHA or some other type of loan when the note comes due, and it really can be a win-win situation. We are seeing more of this coming back. So if you haven't educated yourself on contract for deed or any other kind of owner financing, I would highly suggest you educate yourself on that. Go to some classes, maybe take CE, research it, because there are a lot of people out in outstate Minnesota, in the 13-county metro area, that could certainly benefit from this. And there are a lot of buyers that still, as they're still recovering from bankruptcies, short sales, and foreclosures of the past, when the market really did shift here in the Twin Cities and throughout the country, that really could benefit from this. And you could be leaving transactions on the table because you're not educated. So again, many people who sold back in the 70s, 80s became very familiar with this. And then, of course, for many years just never used it anymore, but they're coming back to this. They're the experts that people want to work with because they understand all the options. You too, regardless if you were in the business back then or if you are now, and if you weren't then but you are now and you've never had the opportunity to structure one of these types of transactions, you should learn how to do it. It's just really important to, I think, understand it as a professional in this industry. Contract for deed works just like owner financing, with one extremely important exception, which is ownership doesn't change hands until the entire sale price is paid in full. So with a conventional home purchase or in an owner financing deal, title gets conveyed up front. Contract for deed is more like an automobile loan, where the car belongs to the buyer only after all payments have been made. And it was a contract for deed that helped put, you know, a lot of people, you know, into situations where they were able to use that money for college, for example, or use that money for other things. So contract for deed can be great for the seller. It can also be a huge opportunity for the right buyer. Another avenue for creative financing is the seller second. This is shorthand for a secondary or subordinate loan made by the seller. So the primary loan, conventional or FHA or whatever, sits first in line for repayment in the event of a default, which increases the risk. But like any second loan, the interest rates are usually higher to compensate for the increased risk. And these are often called maybe a seller carryback. Seller seconds are invaluable. Properly disclosed seller seconds can help buyers avoid private mortgage insurance or not being able to qualify for a loan in general. Seller seconds can benefit a buyer by allowing for a smaller down payment, lower monthly payments, or even avoiding higher interest rates on a jumbo loan in certain situations. So, you know, that's just something important to understand, that there is option for that, and there are some sellers who are able and willing to do that. Some other methods of creative financing include lease options and lease purchases, which are not as common as they once were. The difference between a lease option and a lease purchase is simple. In a lease option, a buyer would rent the home for a certain period of time, after which the buyer would have the exclusive option to purchase the home at an agreed-upon price. A lease purchase simply stipulates that the buyer will buy the home at the end of the term for an agreed-upon price. So when potential buyers cannot qualify in any other way, these become creative ways to get the seller out from underneath the house payment, potentially sell the house if they used a lease option, and definitely sell the house if they used a lease purchase. Things to look out for, though: document how the sellers set the rent or even pay for a formal rent survey, and make sure all parties are represented by their own attorney. And finally, if prices fall during the term of the agreement, you may run into trouble getting an appraisal, which means a larger down payment from the buyer, so that's just something to look out for. Finally, wraparound mortgages, or wraps, and assumable mortgages sit at the bottom of the list for a very good reason: the due-on-sale clause. While both are highly effective, the advent of the due-on-sale clause, meaning the amount owed on a mortgage is due to the lender upon sale of a property, in most mortgages has made this extremely rare. A wrap is a situation where the owner offers you a new loan while keeping and paying down their original loan. The new loan wraps the original. Some lenders will allow a wrap if it is disclosed. There are people who have successfully used a fully disclosed wrap to purchase, subdivide, and later sell land, you know, and sometimes even properties. The mortgage banker, you know, needs to be involved from start to finish and agree to it. Otherwise, they can, of course, enforce that due on sale clause, and then it will blow everything up. Don't do it without investigating the circumstances for sure, and don't do it without disclosing it. But every now and then, a wrap will be the solution that saves a sale, so it's good for you to at least know what it's about. In an assumable mortgage, the buyer takes responsibility for the seller's mortgage when allowed by the seller's mortgage lender. Some government loans like FHA, VA are assumable, right? And these are, they used to be rare, then they became more common again because so many people started doing VA and FHA. So it's just important to understand that these are assumable. You know, higher mortgage interest rates can make assumable loans more attractive, so the buyer can enjoy the favorable rates of the pre-existing loan versus having to get a new loan at a higher rate. And so you just need to make sure that the lender has motivation to agree to it, that it can be assumed by that particular buyer. And the main reason some of these loans were designed to be assumable, particularly the VA, was to protect sellers who may no longer be able to afford their home. In this case, the logic was that it was better to let the loan be assumed than to force a veteran into foreclosure. That's why it initially started. And sellers should know what their options are. So once you've visited with the seller and you've studied the property, you can then analyze its potential for creative financing. Laws and regulations, of course, vary from state to state and from province to province, so you'd be wise to run any potential strategy, you know, by your broker before you you commit pen to paper. Be in good relationship with lending professionals so that you can run by ideas by them and understand ramifications. They may even have other ideas for creative financing that you don't know about. There are more of them kind of coming up again now, to help kind of continue to get buyers into properties as, you know, interest rates creep up slightly, et cetera. So in particular, you know, lease options, lease purchases, and contract for deeds are subject to many local laws and restrictions. And they're mostly enacted to protect buyers from, you know, sellers that aren't doing the right thing. Anytime there is an agreement in play other than the offer contract, and this includes owner financing, just make sure all parties are represented by their own attorney if need be for everyone's protection, and that you always want to disclose and disclaim everything possible, and again, run things by your broker, of course. So creative things buyers can do to purchase a home. There are probably a few things worse than being a buyer who is unable to buy in a buyer's market, right? The market shifts, homeownership suddenly looks like a possibility for a buyer, and then they discover that there are mortgage challenges to overcome. And when buyers have difficulty qualifying for a mortgage loan, it's usually because credit, income, or assets, right? In a shift, lenders tend to tighten their lending standards, so knowing proven workarounds for all three of these can become essential for your buyers, and you are the person that's driving this. You're the person that's the expert, so you need to understand this. Good credit is necessary for a loan, right? As obvious as it sounds, it always amazes me how many buyers don't grasp this, and I'm sure you feel the same way. A damaged credit score can be raised, but it takes time to repair it, often with the help of some either, you know, advice from a great lender you work with, or a certified credit counselor. If your buyers have credit issues that can't be quickly remedied, then you're probably back to appealing to the seller for owner financing, a contract for deed, a lease option, or lease purchase, right? But there are so many mortgage companies now that have done a great job of being able to sit down with people and have a plan in place for 3 months, 6 months to get their finance, or, I'm sorry, to get their credit up to the point where they can then, in fact, get approved for financing. So find a professional in that arena that is ethical and knowledgeable and has the ability to help, and it will make a big difference in your business and the way you service and help your buyers. Income is the second category that your buyers might have a challenge with, and if your buyers have an income challenge, either they don't earn enough qualifying income or the lender won't recognize it for whatever reason, again, if they're self-employed, et cetera, you might suggest the buyer find a non-occupant co-borrower or, again, appeal to the seller for help. And finally, the most common obstacle for buyers is coming up with the down payment and closing costs, and some potential home buyers simply haven't saved enough or haven't saved nothing at all, and if the seller isn't willing to make a contribution towards the buyer's costs, you'll have to find your buyer another viable source of funds. And most of the creative things buyers can do relate to coming up with assets for a down payment. So the first place a buyer should look for assistance with purchasing a home is family, right? Close family members, traditionally the most common option for obtaining down payment and closing cost funds. Gift letters and documentation must be in place, but all in all, it's a very straightforward answer to finding purchase funds. And, you know, in our experience, parents and grandparents with financial capability to help are often proud to play a part in a child or grandchild's transition into home ownership. Along with family, there are only a handful of other approved sources for financial gifts to buy real estate. Other sources for down payment funds or closing costs are available, including, you know, accredited nonprofit agencies, government grants, churches, domestic partners, trade unions, etc. Many forward-thinking engaged couples are taking advantage of creative ideas like requesting that down payment funds be gifted in lieu of traditional, you know, wedding registry gift items, which I think is a great idea. When enough wedding guests offer funds instead of place settings, right, or towels, it can add up to a substantial portion, if not all, of the down payment. Just make sure your buyers know about options like this, because it may apply to them. Another creative avenue available to buyers is selling or refinancing another asset. It's not uncommon for buyers to sell some of their stuff, right? Boats, cars, stock options, stamp collections, right? To raise money to buy a home. Remember, when a buyer is truly motivated, they may surprise you with their own creative solutions. All you have to do is prompt them a little and get their creative juices flowing. Remember that the lender will want to verify the source of the money used for the down payment, and you will need to have receipts and third-party appraisals to confirm that the painting your buyer sold was really worth $3,500, for example. Explain to the buyer that they must keep a paper trail and understand the lender will likely do an independent verification as well. By the way, get the lender involved before that so you're not advising, but that the lender can advise exactly what needs to be done here. And buyers can also find money and change their loan worthiness by paying off or refinancing existing debt. And so, you know, Gary Keller himself actually refinanced his beige four-door Honda Accord when he purchased his first home. The car had held its value, and he he paid it off, so there was room to put a new loan on it, pull some money out, and so he did that and used the money for the down payment and closing costs. And even with the new car payments on his credit statement, he still qualified for the mortgage. So that's just another example of things that people might be able to do. There are numerous other solutions to help buyers, from non-occupant co-borrowing where mom and dad buy the house, son or daughter, to borrowing against a 401k and IRA funds. You know, there's pledged asset mortgage buyers that can pledge assets such as CDs, stocks, bonds, and, you know, that they don't want to actually liquidate or borrow against. There's equity transfers and bridge loans are options. And most lenders can help you navigate that transaction, which can be common for buyers who are trading up or down. And finally, you know, even some corporations have established employee down payment assistant programs. If your buyer works for a large corporation, you know, get them to inquire with their HR department to check on availability of those types of things. But bottom line is your awareness of these options and how to take advantage of them is the key to converting more buyers into homeowners in a shifting market, in any market, to be honest. But these creative financing ideas expand the number of buyers who can buy and then therefore sellers who can sell. And in that situation, everyone wins. Lastly, the final player in a creative home purchase transaction, of course, is a lender. A knowledgeable loan officer could possibly help your buyer tap into, you know, a conventional loan program that may have been overlooked or forgotten in recent years, a great new, you know, FHA or rural development opportunity for somebody depending upon where they're buying. The list goes on and on. And at the top of the list is a lender-funded buy-down. The goal here is to help a buyer stretch their debt ratios in order to qualify for a mortgage, temporarily offsetting a current drop in income, or to provide permanent relief because income isn't anticipated to be higher in the future. So that's something that, you know, a lender may know more about and could explain to you, and of course, more importantly, to your buyer as a potential opportunity. So, you know, a great mortgage professional is going to be able to help you in a lot of ways. They can submit and resubmit loan applications through automated underwriting programs, tweaking the criteria until they figure out just what a buyer needs to do to qualify for a loan. We talked about how they can actually help them do certain things to improve their credit score over a period of time to get them approved. A little extra effort from a mortgage professional assisting in the transaction can truly go a long way towards getting it done. So make sure you're partnered with somebody who is ethical, but who is also creative and who can really work with you to find the best options and all the options for your buyers so they can make an educated decision. You know, lenders will, you know, can factor in tax savings associated with home ownership and counted as qualifying income. They can do different things to adjust interest rates, to cover different closing costs, or to offer buy-down solutions. I mean, the list goes on and on. When all else fails, your lender may be able to recommend, you know, like I said, private lenders who might finance the home purchase or give a second. They should have great referral sources for you and your buyers as well. The lending landscape is inherently diverse, right? It's always subject to change. It seems new lending programs pop up all the time and lending standards are constantly flux. And it is therefore imperative that you seek out and partner with the best. It really is. You're looking for knowledge, experience, creativity, and integrity. They must be flexible and responsive to both you and your clients. That's the bottom line. So, basically, when it comes to any market, and any shifting market, any buyer's market, seller's market, doesn't matter. You are going to be a better professional. You are going to be better equipped to guide your buyers and your sellers if you're partnered with a great mortgage professional, if you've got private bankers in your back pocket, if you understand all the options, if you know how to do a contract for deed. You know, all of these things need to be in your toolbox. You need to have all the tools available to your clients to make sure that you're answering all their questions and you're giving them all of their options. It's going to help you in any market, but it truly will make a difference between if you're selling homes or not in a shifting market. That's the bottom line. Make sure you are always disclosing and disclaiming. The last words of every creative financing transactions are disclose and disclaim. Your mantra must always be disclose, 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 disclaim, 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 right? If you can't disclose it to everyone and put it on a closing statement, it probably isn't legal. And if you can't disclaim your liability from it, then usually means someone is intending to hold you liable. So disclose what you're doing. Disclaim responsibility for it. Always add a disclosure and disclaimer where all parties acknowledge what they're doing and agree not to hold you responsible or liable for what has been decided and done. This puts everyone on notice for what they've done and that you're not in the lawsuit loop on it. And disclosing and disclaiming, it also gives your office leadership, of course, your brokerage, the chance to check your math, watch your back, and check with them early in the process, like I had said, and often to ensure the financing solutions that you're offering won't be putting yourself or your business partners at risk. And It's the right thing to do for everybody involved, right? To succeed to your highest level in a shift, you need to become proficient at creative financing. Make sure you have a clear understanding of the current options available, like I said, to both your buyers and sellers. Meet with your finance team very regularly to work out options and solutions. Be educated. It takes commitment, effort, and weekly or monthly slots on your calendar. Don't let your calendar convict you on this one. Your financial success and the financial future of your buyers and sellers will truly depend on it. Make a date with finance. Keep it all year, every year. It's one more way you'll take luck out of play and make the most out of your career. Next week, 11 a.m. Central Standard Time again on Friday, right back here live with Coaching with Kerry on Blog Talk Radio, we are going to be talking about tactic number 11, which is to master the market of the moment. We're going to talk about short sales, foreclosures, and REOs. By the way, they are down now, but things are cyclical. They're going to come back. We want to just let you know you need to be in the game and understand this. As maybe some more short sales or foreclosures start to pop up on the market as we start seeing another shift in the future, if you've never done it before, you're going to need to have some capacity to understand it. So we're going to talk about that. And then last tactic, which is tactic number 12, which will be the following Friday, is called bulletproofing the transaction, issues and solutions. And this is one that I know is going to benefit you all year long in any market. So I'm excited to talk to you the next 2 weeks about the last two tactics, number 11 and 12, of this amazing New York Times bestseller shift, how top real estate agents tackle tough times. So join me back here again, 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, Coaching with Kerry live on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can listen to any of these coaching sessions right back on my page here because they are all recorded. And again, reach out to me if you'd like a copy of this book or any other book that I've done my coaching series on. All you need to do is email me at kerryh@kw.com, find me on Twitter at kerryhkw, or go on Facebook, search up Coaching with Kerry, and message me there. Thanks so much, you guys. Have a wonderful weekend. I look forward to seeing you back here next week. Bye-bye.